This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two as we roll along on your April Fool's Friday. We got the good, the bad, and the dumb coming up. And we'll also take a look at more in-depth into these teams, into the NCAA tournament. We'll be talking about North Carolina and what Hubert Davis is going to be bringing on Saturday. I know we've overhyped Duke and North Carolina, but there's a very, very good reason for this. Normally, we don't get rivals competing at the highest, highest level. We don't see the Iron Bowl play out in a national championship game. Sometimes we do see, like, Michigan, Ohio State maybe playing their regular season finale, and the winner goes to the Rose Bowl, or the winner goes to the college football playoff, or something along those lines. But rarely do we get to see it on this level and this stage. It's going to bring back a lot of the memories. It's going to bring back every fan of both teams, because this is the game that's going to be epic in terms of the history of the rivalry. Whoever wins this game not only can say that they knocked the team out of the tournament, but can do it at the Final Four. Right. And that's just something that you, if you're a fan of the Tar Heels or the fan of the Blue Devils, this is something you're going to relish. But on the flip side of it, it is also something you're going to be a little worried about. If you're a Villanova fan, you may lose to Kansas, but you're not losing to Temple. Right. You're not losing to Providence. You're not losing to any other team in the Big East. You're just losing to a good Kansas team. But if North Carolina or Duke fall, which one falls on Saturday night, that fan base is going to be devastated on another level. It's not just because the Final Four run ended. It's going to be because the rival got the best of you. The team you hate the most got the best of you in the most important game of the rivalry that has been going on forever and ever and ever. Every good player that has passed through those programs that has a hand in this rivalry are all probably in unison that it is the most important game ever played between these two schools, and it is going to be on Saturday night. It has been worth the hype. A lot of times we really get hyperbolic on these kind of things, but I think in this case, it was well worth it. And I think I don't know what kind of game it's going to be on Saturday. Maybe Duke wins by 20. Maybe North Carolina wins by 10. I don't know. But I do know this. I know the ramifications are going to be deep for whoever loses that game and whoever wins that game, the kind of bragging rights that they will have. Good, the bad, and the dumb is coming up next on your, again, April Fool's Friday on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb. April Fool's. I don't know what to expect with the good, the bad, and the dumb today on April Fool's. Maybe just the good, the bad, and the dumb. Who knows? All right, what's the good of the day?
Well, actually, you can't. Let me rewind that here for a second. You know what you can expect,
right?
Is a couple in maybe each category.
Oh, okay.
We missed yesterday, so I got to double up.
Sure.
So we have two goods today. The first being the U.S. men's national team did, in fact, qualify for the World Cup.
Yes,
Wednesday.
They did. Congratulations.
Despite losing 2-0, it didn't really matter. I mean, they played horrible, but I think they went more defensively and just did not want to lose 6-0.
Don't want to lose. Can you imagine if they had lost 6-0 and couldn't get in?
Yes.
And like what we'd go, forget it. Let's not even try anymore. Let's just quit.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah, I can understand why you'd be like, let's just play defensively.
Just play defensively the entire time. They had no real attack going on at all. And so, they qualified for the World Cup. And a bonus for you guys on April Fool's Day today, 11 o'clock Central, noon Eastern time. Mm-hmm. Is the World Cup draw.
Today. Oh, yeah.
Even though not all the spots have been finalized, those playing games that still need to be determined, which won't happen until June, they will be slotted. So you will know where the winner of that game, like Costa Rica will be playing New Zealand in June. We will know what group that, whoever the winner of that game, Costa Rica, will be.
That
where
makes
they
sense.
Will be.
That
but you, well, we wow. should know how the group play of U.S. looks. Come this fall.
Are we going to be in the group of death?
God, I hope not.
Weren't we like, a couple of years ago?
We were in the group of death.
Huh?
In 2016. I think we were in a group of death.
Yeah, I think it was 2016. Yeah. 2014.
Yeah. 16 was the Olympics in Brazil.
That's right.
They had back-to-back.
Brazil was having a good time hosting events. Yeah. How are those buildings holding up today?
Most of them probably aren't.
Probably falling apart. Probably
exactly.
Nobody, painting them or keeping them up. Nobody's using them. Yeah.
I expect vines, ivy to be growing on the outside.
Exactly.
And just swallowing the building whole, especially just that one in the rainforest.
It. Yeah, the soccer stadium of the rainforest. Yeah, that's right. I can't imagine that getting a lot of use today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll never forget because the U.S. played there.
Yep, sure did.
And they said it was like, 400% humidity.
Yeah, it was like playing on playing on Venus.
Yeah. Right? God, must have been terrible.
Awful. Just atrocious.
The second good of the day, which happened, this is one of my favorite stories I think I've seen.
Okay.
And it's the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, okay. What are they doing?
They helped out a mom.
Oh, did they really?
They did. A viral video surfaced of a mom all excited about taking her daughter to see the Red Hot Chili Peppers. And she was kind of surprised that a band of this stature would be playing a 1,200-capacity Pachoke Theater outside Long Island.
Yeah.
And it turned out that she bought tickets for the Red Hot Chili Pipers.
That was, a tribute band?
No, it's a Scottish... I'm using air quotes. Rock band.
You've
fusion,
got to be kidding.
Bagpipes.
Oh no! Oh no!
So
that's horrible. That's one of the worst stories I've ever heard.
But the Red Hot Chili Peppers stepped up, and they are offering her and her daughter tickets to any one of their shows the next time they're in town. Anthony Kiedis and Flea. Said, we would love for you guys to be our special guests.
Oh, that's great. Good for them. You know what? That's one of the good things about social media.
Yes.
Is that things can come to stars' attention a lot quicker. Like these bands have PR people that are monitoring that stuff all the time. And they're like, hey, you got to hear this story. Look at this. Yeah. But on the one hand, Come on.
I guess she didn't read the fine print
right.
Or just the band name total. This isn't a first, though. I guess people have made this mistake in the past.
Yeah. That would be
the Red Hot Chili Pipers, which, this one author of this article wrote, great band name.
I got to be true, right? True. But, I mean...
But can you imagine you're ready to, start singing Under the Bridge, Californication. You're ready for the band to come out and then a Scottish rock fusion bagpipe band takes the stage.
Exactly.
It's a little different.
It is a little different. Yeah, I mean, really look at that. But I think she said it best when she was like, a 1,200 seat? Is Flea going to be up there?
Yeah.
I can't possibly
kind of surprised.
Be right.
1,200 capacity, and it's going to be an intimate setting.
Like she's probably like Vanilla Ice. I get
at the
Red Hot Chili Peppers,
and I hope I'm saying it right. Pachoke Theater.
I'm sure you are.
I don't know.
Who knows? But yeah, all right. Well, good for the Red Hot Chili Peppers chipping in.
Yeah.
All right.
That should be a fun time.
Should be a good time, especially as special guests.
Yes.
How great is that? All right, that was the
second good of the day,
the bad of the day.
And this isn't really bad,
right?
Okay, because I'm bringing this up mainly because I picked a story for you.
Oh, good.
But there was a survey done about just how much golfers would be willing to play or willing to pay to play one round at Augusta National.
I would give up my whole family. I'm kidding, but
that's what I thought.
Not quite.
And they have it broken down between incomes. If your income is between $20,000 and $40,000 a year, you would agree to pay about $492.
Okay, yeah.
But if your income is more, like say over $100,000 or more, you're willing to pay nearly $3,200.
Okay, if I had a chance to play, I would. I know this is going to sound crazy. I would pay $1,000 to play. I would pay $1,000. I would just charge it and figure out a way to pay it down the road.
Yeah.
Like I would pay $1,000. Would I pay two? I, at be a hard sell, but like I would be willing to work.
What if it came with free pimento cheese sandwiches?
Right, probably. But like I would work part-time at a gas station, the midnight to 6 a.m. shift to pay off if I had an opportunity to play that course. Like I would love to. I got connections with people who I'm hoping become powerful business people that when I'm like 70, they'll just take me finally.
Yes.
Like that's my goal. Like I keep teasing my buddy who runs those political campaigns. I'm like, you don't know. He lives in Atlanta. He lives in upstate South Carolina, not far from Augusta. He's got a home in Columbia, South Carolina, which is 45 minutes from Augusta. He doesn't play a lick of golf. I go, you don't know one person that could get your buddy, your 35-year friend, on that course. And he keeps telling me he's working on it, but he's not working on it. But, you know, I would pay $1,000 to play that course, and I would just suck it up.
Yeah.
Because
it's not really bad. I don't want to leave you on a Friday with a bad.
Right.
You know, I could have gone other routes, but I decided not to. But I needed to slot this in there somewhere. And, you know, I figured this is, you know, I'm just curious.
Do you know what's interesting, though? Because I told you, I did my research on this course. I've read everything about this course as possible.
Yes.
Let's say you were a member and you invited me to play. I do have to pay a greens fee, but it's very inexpensive. Again, like Augusta National, if you're a guest, you are a guest of a member. That they don't blow you off and go, yeah, well, you're just a guest. You're a guest of a member, and they try to treat you as great as they possibly can. So it's very inexpensive to play once you get the pass from the member that play the course. Many years ago, it was $50. To play that course. So very, very reasonable. If again, you can get somebody to take you on and get you in. But for me, $1,000. That's how much I would pay. All right. What's the second bad?
I don't have a second bad.
Oh, okay. That you just had two.
I do have two dumps.
I can't wait. By the way, I can't wait for next week. It's my favorite week of the year. I just love that course so much. It's ridiculously insane. I love it. So what's the dumb of the day?
I got two.
Okay.
Because it's a tradition like none other, Tony.
Yes.
We have yet another strange baseball injury that always seems to happen around spring training.
All the time.
Blue Jays pitcher Jordan Romano sprained his ankle while walking his dog.
Sure. Sure he was walking his dog. Sure. Sure it was.
Said he was walking his dog just like, you know, any red-blooded American does once in a while. And
couldn't be because it was spring training.
Slipped.
Things happen in spring training.
It is believed, though, that he won't miss any time. He should be ready by opening day.
Very good. Be very skeptical of these spring training injuries, because when you take a bunch of young baseball players and you put them in the state of Arizona and Florida, where there's a lot of sunshine and there's a lot of boredom, things tend to happen.
Yeah.
Like, you ever notice that a lot of games are, some games are at night, but a lot of games are just in the afternoon?
In the afternoon.
You don't think the players have, like, begged for that from, like, hey, I'd rather not spend my evenings playing worthless spring training games, if you know what I mean.
I want to say it's in the arbitration of like page 300 and something.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be just better if we got these done in the afternoon and we could wrap these up at, let's say, I don't know, about 4 o'clock?
Sure, we'll do a Friday night game every once in a while for the fans.
Sure, because everybody likes night baseball.
But if you watch those games, how many of the stars are you going to see?
Yep, but let's not make a steady diet of this, because I've got partying to do.
Yeah.
So
1 o'clock start time, fine by me.
You ever been to a spring training game and seen the fans, quote unquote?
I've been to a spring training game.
Yeah,
mid afternoon on a Saturday.
I went down to Tucson years ago, and I was doing my show. My producer was at the Rockies game, and that was the only thing he talked about when he got back.
I bet.
Really? He goes, Tony, they were everywhere.
It's great sightseeing.
Yeah, very much so. Again, it's 85 degrees and sunny.
Yes.
They're not wearing parkas.
And for most of you people, you're coming from a place that is not that.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so there are, there's a certain, I guess, liberties are taken?
Yeah.
Is that a nice way to say it from a certain fan base?
I agree. I agree. So, yeah.
The second dumb of the day, and this one might be one of my favorites again. After the Bills announced a new $1.4 billion stadium, the Kansas City Chiefs have emerged to be the next team to want a new stadium.
Of course. Of course. It's coming in droves. Yes. I'm telling you, this is the way it does. It works in waves.
But why is this dumb, Tony?
Yeah.
Team president Mark Donovan threatened to move the team to,
sure he did,
to Kansas. Confusing, confusing a lot of people.
So he was basically, I got it. Oh, very, very good. So he wasn't threatening to move him to Portland.
No, of course not.
No, no, no. He was, very funny. You clever, clever team.
So he will move them to the other side of Kansas City.
Right.
Because if you don't know, Kansas City is actually in two states.
Two states, yep. Sure
and
is.
Currently, they are in the state of Missouri.
They've got a very nice, if you've ever driven through Kansas City, and I have a couple times, it's a very cool, like, sports complex area. Like, it's yes. right off the highway. You can see both stadiums, Kauffman Stadium and Arrowhead. They're right next to each other. It's really, see, it's like Philadelphia. Philadelphia is the same way.
But, I mean, I get that they want a new stadium, but do you want to give up Arrowhead?
Just renovate Arrowhead the way you want it. Just right. renovate. Don't build a brand new one across the yeah. river or whatever.
You guys, I don't know how engineering wise it doesn't make any sense to me that you can be the loudest stadium because it is such a huge bowl.
It is a bowl
that
yeah.
I don't know how sound stays trapped in there, but sound stays trapped in there.
It sure does. One of the loudest places you'll ever see hear a game.
But I love the fact that I don't know. I'm hoping that it wasn't people in Kansas City that were confused then when he said he'd move them to Kansas. I hope it was people outside the city.
Yeah, I hope people outside. Yeah, exactly. Not understanding what was going on.
But if it was people in the city and they were confused by that, God help us.
Was he like, oh my God, Topeka? Wichita? What's he talking about?
Can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Kansas
City. We're not going
to
Manhattan, Kansas, are we?
It's not Kansas Chiefs.
Oh my God. Yeah, no doubt. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb on the Friday edition. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, we're going to talk North Carolina basketball coming up in 10 minutes. C.L. Brown of the News and Observer will talk to us about what's going on in Chapel Hill. 8-seeded North Carolina taking on Duke, of course, Saturday night in the Final Four. What has gone right towards the end of the season, and what does he expect from the game against the Blue Devils, because that was a pretty shocking outcome on the season finale at Cameron when North Carolina beat Duke to spoil that little fun party. But can they do it again? We'll talk to, again, C.L. Brown coming up. You brought the up how the Buffalo Bills are going to be getting a new stadium, and they passed this ordinance, and the state and the city are going to contribute like $550 million or something, yep. and the Bills are going to come up with the rest. The league is going to come up with the rest. And that, and you talked about the Kansas City Chiefs, earlier this week here in Nashville, the Tennessee Titans did the exact same thing. The governor is proposing $500 million in public bonds for a new stadium for the Titans. Now, the Titans, it's interesting because the Titans just wanted money for renovations. But the governor of the state, he thought it would be great if the Titans got a new stadium because of the concerts and the Super Bowl possibility, if it's a dome stadium, you know, that are on the table. And the NFL does, especially if you have a dome stadium in the north part of the country, if you build a stadium with public funds, they have a tendency to want to reward you with a Super Bowl.
Yeah,
here you go. We may not come back,
you know,
but here you go.
You know what? Let's be honest here. A Super Bowl in Nashville would be incredible.
Yeah, it would be great. It would
be
fun.
You talk about a party town.
Yeah, they know what they're doing. They know how to do that.
How much fun would that be?
But it's really, again, there is no reason at all. Now, look, you, me, everybody else, we can all talk about how public funds, ridiculous that it goes to these stadiums, right? It's ridiculous that billionaires are using public money for their
right.
stadiums. It's insane. But they've got a willing participant in government. Like they it's like these people, the governors, they want to do this. They want to. The Tennessee example is perfect, right? I'm watching the news, right? And what do I see? I see a bunch of local politicians talking about the benefits of this, right? Like, well, we'll raise money for a new stadium, and we'll have potential for a Super Bowl, the concerts, and then, you know, of course, the question is, how do you make the money back? We'll make the money back from all of the tax money that comes from the surrounding businesses of the redeveloped area around the stadium. Do you know how many studies there are where that doesn't actually happen like people think it? There are a whole bunch of them where the people go, nah, it's all good. We'll get it back, if not more. And then there's report after report after report of, yeah, it didn't really work out like you thought it was going to work out. Like it didn't develop, because most stadiums, here's why it doesn't work out the way it works out. Because most stadiums, right, have an existing business infrastructure around it, right? What you are hoping when you build a new stadium is that there's additional revenue that's coming in on top of the revenue you're already spending in the budget coming from those businesses whenever events are being held at the stadium. So you're hoping that you get, one, a new stadium where other businesses will be built around it, and two, more business, more action in the existing businesses to drive in revenue. And it doesn't always work that way. And so that's the ploy, right, that government uses all the time to get public funds for these stadiums. And they don't really work out as well. Now, don't get me wrong. We don't see cities in complete and utter chaos because they built an NFL football stadium. But it is still a burden on the taxpayers. But it's a perfect storm for the NFL. Because the NFL goes, we'd like a new stadium. And then they go, oh, I don't know if we can afford it. And they go, we'll see. If we can stay, it's too competitive. We need them luxury suites. And then no government wants to lose the team. Because as I said earlier this week, we in the public, the citizens of these towns, we never tell the politicians that it is okay when the team leaves. We go, somebody's paying for this, and it's going to be you, mayor. It's going to be you, councilman. It's going to be you, senator. It's going to be you, governor, when the team leaves. And every politician knows it. So the politician is in a no-win situation because he wants to capitulate to the demands of the league and the team by building the stadium, and ain't his money. And two, he knows that the fans will never forgive him if he's on the clock when the team decides to pack up its stuff and leave. I remember years ago when I was in Colorado, I put together the five easy steps of moving a franchise. And it basically goes like this. If you are an owner and you buy a team, basketball, hockey, whatever, and you want to move that team, five ways you do it. One, you buy the team and you tell the people you're never leaving, ever, ever, ever. You say, I'm committed to this. Even if you're from somewhere else, you have no home in that city. You tell people, oh, we're here forever. It's a long tradition of this team being here. But then two, you get with the local politicians to start complaining about whatever it is you want to complain about your facilities. We don't have a good arena. We don't have a good stadium. Whatever it is, we're not in a good part of town. And then you have those politicians, through working with your team, to propose the most ridiculous tax hike in the history of the city. Something that is bound to fail if it hits the ballot. We're going to raise property taxes. We're going to take money from schools. Find the most ridiculous thing and get it on the ballot. Wait for it to fail and then act really, really sad and disappointed. And then the fifth thing you do, get the hell out of town as quickly as you possibly can. That's how you do it. You know, get approval from your fellow owners, which is almost guaranteed, and then just leave. Because that's how they manipulate the political element. They get either, A, if they want to leave, they propose something so ridiculous, even the most diehard fan would turn it down. Or two, they work with the governments to put up a tax system that is kind of, it's not terrible. It ain't the end of the world, but it's still a tax to raise enough money so they can build the stadium. But it never comes back to the governments. It doesn't flow. The money doesn't pour in like a faucet when new stadiums are built. But the teams, they don't care if it does or not. Because in the end, they get a new crib. PSLs, luxury, parking, all of that just comes their way. Great business if you can get into it, man. Great business. Tar Heels, speaking of good business, how in the world are they in the Final Four? Well, we'll talk about Hubert Davis and the Tar Heels next.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsmap Radio Network, alongside Ron Culver Here's Tony D.
Thanks for joining us. We continue. It is Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio, Final Four coming up on Saturday. Yeah, of course, a lot of the attention on Duke, North Carolina, given the historic nature of the rivalry. You know, it's one of those things I've been kind of buzzing about this week. You can live in different parts of the country and hear about how great rivalry. Everybody talks about their rivalry, right? And, you know, you sit in a room with 10 people from around the country, and they'll all tell you how their rivalry is so special. Man, there's nothing like Washington, Washington State, or nothing like Oregon, Oregon State. Civil War, right? Whatever it may be. And if you don't have a direct attachment to it, it's hard to really buy it, right? You just kind of get it. Yeah, the two sides don't like each other. Ah, they play these important games. Ah. But Duke, North Carolina has been one of those rivalries because of the players involved, because of the coaches that have been involved, in it, its level of importance in the landscape of college basketball, where the regular season has such a diminished quality, Duke, North Carolina has taken on another sort of level, right? It's like, well, I can't really get psyched up for regular season matchups. The tournament is so open, et cetera. But this one I can get involved in. Like, this one I can watch. This one I'm interested in. Because there's something about it that sort of draws a lot of people in. And now it is going to be on the highest stage. But there's more than that. It's again, Mike Krzyzewski's final run in the NCAA tournament. And it's Hubert Davis's first run through the tournament as the head coach. Now, remember when Roy Williams stepped down, there was a lot of buzz about, you know, did he step down because of the changing ways of college basketball? Was he just tired of what college basketball was going to start being? Who knows? Maybe he was just done. It's fine. But Hubert Davis was going to be taking over a program that was sort of, you know, kind of like, where is North Carolina? Like, in the hierarchy of things, right? We saw Virginia out of the ACC win a national championship. Duke wasn't going away anytime soon. Louisville was starting to become better. Yeah, some other teams were starting to become better. Where was North Carolina that had always been near the top? And this was a team that was on the bubble, right? Now, maybe on the right side of the bubble, right? There's ways you can look at the bubble. And maybe they weren't it wasn't as precarious as some people thought it was. But they were kind of on the bubble when they went to Cameron and played Duke in the season finale. And then by winning that game, they sort of locked themselves in, and now they're in the Final Four. And they did so by beating Baylor, and they did so by beating St. Peter's, America's darling. And they've done it under a first-year head coach. Now, this has happened before to North Carolina. Bill Guthridge got the Tar Heels to a Final Four in his first year. But again, it's okay to overhype this one because of what is at stake. I love the poetry of sports sometimes, right? I love it. It's because it's unscripted drama. It's unlike anything that we have, right? And I've tried to explain this to my friends who are into the film and theater. I'm like, you go to a movie, you go to a theater. The ending has already been determined. It just hasn't been revealed to you yet. The writer, the director, the actors, they know how this story is going to end. You just haven't seen it. That's not what happens in sports. We don't know how these stories end. We don't know what's going to take place, and that is part of the fun. The part of the fun Saturday night is Mike Krzyzewski going to end his long, illustrious, greatest coaching run ever career at the hands of North Carolina? We have no idea. Now, the pundits, the bettors, the, you know, the lines makers will say Duke is 70% favored to win this game, right? But it's not set in stone. It's not already been determined. There isn't a cue card somewhere that will say, and the winner Saturday night is going to be, and it's being sort of protected by some security guards until it's finally revealed. You're going to see Brady Mannix. You're going to see Hubert Davis try to control this game like they did when they played the Blue Devils back in early March at Cameron. And I'm looking forward to it for the field. Now, again, could it be a blowout? Right? Could Duke take the lead of this game early, never look back, and dismiss North Carolina as if they were some other pesky team on their in their way towards a national title. It could, and it could also mean that this game doesn't really have the same impact. But I would argue that it has an impact in that no matter what happens, this is a separate chapter in everything that they have ever done before. The bloody battles, the animosity, the fans, the can't, you're not going to get out of here alive, you know, sort of mentality that sometimes these games have generated. The history of the players that have gone through this. Where are you going to find a bigger game in the rivalry, in the history of the rivalry? College basketball just doesn't do the regular season the same way. It just doesn't. Right? So let's go to C.L. Brown from the News and Observer to talk North Carolina Tar Heels. How are you, C.L.? Thanks for joining us.
Doing well. How are you doing this morning?
Good. On our Progressive guest line, Progressive Insurance, making bundling home and auto easy. Learn more at progressive.com. So as I was saying earlier, this is such a big, important game because of the rivalry. How has it been this week, and how has North Carolina gotten to a point where they've got a basketball game to play regardless of who the opponent is?
I know, but given where they were earlier in the season, it's kind of shocking that they made it to this point. But the funny thing is they never stopped believing. I did an interview, a profile on Caleb Love back in January, and he was still talking national championship. And it kind of struck me as odd because, you know, I was like, you guys just lost by 22, you know, to Wake Forest and 29 to Miami. Like, that's not what a championship or a Final Four team does. But it just took a while for them to get their bearings, to kind of, you know, get in sync as a team, given that Hubert Davis did not run all the same things that Roy Williams did. Hubert inserted his own stamp on the program and his own wrinkles in what has kind of been the traditional Carolina way of playing basketball. So it took a while for that to happen. It took a while for them to gel as individuals, and now we're seeing that come to fruition. And the thing is, I don't think it's been too crazy. I think it was probably good for them to get out of Chapel Hill, because then I feel like it's more of a crescendo building on campus. And, you know, they came to New Orleans on Wednesday, flew out. So I feel like they're in enough of a bubble, so to speak, to where the outside stuff isn't really getting to them. And I also thought, going back to the regular season finale at Duke, I thought Hubert Davis did a good job of keeping them from getting sucked into the hype of Coach K's last home game, and you know, all of the hoopla that surrounded all the former Duke players coming back. Which, to me, it clearly affected Duke in that situation. And I felt like they played with pressure when they played in Cameron, and they couldn't live up to that. They couldn't live up to 40-something years of Duke basketball being there and it being Coach K's finale. And, you know, that was part of the reason why Duke didn't play as well as they could have in that regular season finale.
I was seeing that of the games that they've lost this season, they've lost by an average of 17. So it seems like if you're just going to lose, lose big. Is there a reason behind that? Is there a reason that when things don't go their way, is there just something that falls apart enough to lead to these kind of double digit losses?
Well, to me, those were earlier losses. You know what I mean? That got away, and that was when. They didn't, this is going to sound funny, but it's like they didn't know how to fight. Like, they didn't know what they needed to do in a situation where another team gets on a run. They were still kind of playing as individuals. And so, you know, they got talented guys. They got some skilled guys. And so, you know, another team gets on a run, instead of thinking about just getting one stop and one basket and kind of taking it, you know, breaking it down like that, it's like they figured if I score this basket, it'll be a 10-point play. And so it led to a lot of in a one-on-one kind of let me take my man mentality. And that's how some of those games just kind of got away from them. But the thing that's been impressive about this team, I mean, and I go back to that game at Duke. Duke went on a 14-0 run in the first half and had a 9-point lead. Had that been earlier in the season, that game also would have been a 20-point loss.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, but they understood how they needed to play. They understood what they needed to do, you know. So even with the crowd going crazy and everything in there, they hunkered down and came back. So I would be very surprised if the game got away from them tomorrow and we ended up seeing a blowout.
How is Brady Manek's arrival? How has that made North Carolina more versatile on offense?
Well, it's totally different. That's the biggest, you know, the biggest change that Hubert Davis has is he wanted to have a stretch four who could step outside. Roy Williams played with two traditional bigs, and it kind of clogged up the lane. Like the thing that Brady Manek brings is spacing for the most part, and obviously shooting. You know, and he even Brady had to kind of come into his own on this team because with Dawson Garcia, the Marquette transfer earlier in the year, he was starting and Manek was coming off the bench. And I think it took a while, especially as a transfer, for Brady Manek to feel some ownership and to really have an investment in this team and really once Dawson left the team you know, for family reasons, Manek has blossomed in those games since.
Is there an identity for those who haven't been watching North Carolina enough? Is there an identity? Are they known for something that people will watch and go, okay, that's working, so I'm believing that they're going to be in this game?
That's a good question because I kind of find it hard to kind of pinpoint what they're known for. I feel like probably they're known for versatility because they have, you know, four different guys offensively who can hurt you, who can put up 20-point games. And we saw, you know, R.J. Davis kind of carry the team in against Baylor in overtime. Well, the end of regulation and overtime after Brady Manek got ejected. Brady had 26 with 10 minutes left before he got ejected for the flagrant 2 elbow. And RJ had 30 that game. And then you come to the Sweet 16, and they're losing to UCLA down 5. And Caleb Love erupts 27 points in the second half and has 30 in back-to-back games. That was the first time in Carolina history that had ever happened. And Armando Bacot has been kind of just a steady presence all year. 29 double-doubles has tied Tim Duncan for the most in the season in the ACC history. And he's just been steady. But he can also, you know, he can also give you the 20. So he's also what kind of keeps the offense balanced. It's not just all jump shooting team. He's been solid in, you know, just kind of maneuvering in the paint. So I think all of that kind of adds up to, you know, a pretty tough scouting report. Like, who are you going to try to take away on this team and get them out of sync? So you take away one, you better be careful because somebody else can hurt you.
C.L. Brown of the News and Observer on the North Carolina Tar Heels. Thank you so much for your time this morning. And I would say enjoy the game, but I'm sure you already are going to.
All right. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you, C. I appreciate it. Again, Progressive Insurance, bundle and protect today with one under one roof. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. We'll talk more about North Carolina when we come back on Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. So we continue. Thanks to C.L. Brown of the News Observer. God, I tell you what, this North Carolina team, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yes.
8 seed on the bubble. They're like, nah, screw it. Let's start playing
North
Carolina basketball.
I love what you're saying. Talking to someone, and they're like, we got national title hopes.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, what? You're barely making the tournament. Like, nah, we'll be good. Don't you worry about it. We'll be fine.
Don't worry about us.
We're good. And then all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute. They're in the final four?
Yeah, and we were fools for thinking they couldn't do it.
That's right. Many of us thought they weren't going to last much longer outside of Baylor.
I mean, this Duke North Carolina game, this is, you know, stop what you're doing Saturday. I'm so happy it's a Saturday night.
Incredible matchups for this fan base, for the people in the state of North Carolina who are involved in this outside of Wake Forest, NC State, and all the other schools. If you're entrenched in this one, I can't think of a more nerve-wracking game in your life than the Final Four.
I mean,
against an opponent that is never going to let you forget this forever.
The city will be shut down, right?
Right. Well, the thing that makes it great is, okay, like we talk about this with rivalries, is that Michigan, Ohio State is a rivalry.
Yeah.
But a lot of these rivalries are, you work with people that root for the other team, right? Like it's part of the everyday existence. Right, you are going to an office in Raleigh, North Carolina, and your cubicle neighbor is probably the fan of the team you can't stand. And you're going to have to hear it from them? I remember when Florida and Florida State played for the national championship in the 90s. Sweet Lord, it was incredible. You'll never, ever forget about it, ever. As long as you live, you're a fan of these teams.